soon the Pentagon and Google will be neighbors. The Defense Department is standing up a presence in Silicon Valley called the Defense Innovation Unit Experimental, DIUX. The goal is to attract top tech talent to government work. Taking that step, though, will not be enough. Peter Newell is former director of the Rapid Equipping Force at the Army, now managing partner at BMNT Partners, and looking at the challenges the Pentagon and the rest of the federal government might face as they turn to Silicon Valley. Thank you very much for being on with me today, Peter. I appreciate your time. What is your sense of the must-dos and must-not-dos as the Pentagon and other federal agencies try to embrace Silicon Valley a little more tightly? Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for the invitation to join you. I think, you know, number one on my must-do list is they clearly have to articulate, particularly the people running the DIUX, that, you know, the role in the Valley really is to bring problems to the Valley. I think the challenge or the mistake that most people make is they strictly come out to the Valley looking for technology, and unfortunately, you know, they meet closed doors. The way the Valley works is, you know, if you have a good, hard, challenging problem and know how to articulate that to a wider group of people, you literally could fill rooms of people. Because the folks here understand that if they can understand a problem and find a solution for it, scale it, they will eventually monetize the solution for it. So if you just show up to look at people's technology, you know, obviously you run into the IP problem, but folks just don't have time to have nebulous conversations about what the government might or might not do 3 to 5 years from now.
You anticipated my next question, but not entirely, and that is, do the incentives that the Pentagon has to offer and the incentives that Silicon Valley responds to align well enough to create the synergy that the Pentagon seems to hope for or expect?
So I learned the hard way as the REF director. You know, first of all, what I'll tell you is what DOD is trying to do today with DIUX, I did with the Rapid Equipping Force 3.5 years ago. I literally had a guy in the Valley who worked for me. I had a program manager in L.A. that worked for me, and they did these kinds of things. And what I learned, you know, for my first foray out here, I did the classic thing. I was at Google talking to a guy about energy problems, and we had a great discussion, and I finally looked at him and said, oh, you know, how much is it going to cost me to get you to actually come to the table with something? He just laughed at me. And he drew a big circle on the wall and then a little itty-bitty circle inside it. And he said, that little itty-bitty circle, that's the DOD R&D budget. That big circle is mine. So I'm not interested in your money. I was after the problem. Thank you. And what I found after that was that if I came and articulated a problem and I got the right people in the room, eventually I could down select out of a crowd a handful of folks who could be best incented to actually do work. And as you asked, the incentives, you know, one is the government can bring what we would call non-diluted capital to the table for a startup. So, for instance, if I have a great idea and I can demonstrate that there is both commercial and defense application for it, one is I can show a much bigger market cap, which means that, you know, for less equity, I can gain more venture or private equity money. But more importantly, if I have a defense application that makes sense, I can use defense R&D dollars to de-risk the R&D work that I'm doing, which traditionally is very, very expensive. And that would allow me to save the equity dollars that I have to actually build a better business. And if I build a better business that sells a viable commercial product, eventually I'll be able to sell that back to the government at a cheaper cost. The other thing that government brings to the table that virtually nobody can, other than that problem, is an exceptional class of what we call super users. So by providing a prototype to the government and putting in, you know, military service members' hands, who we all know, you know how to break virtually anything, even if it's not supposed to be broken,
right?
You will get very harsh, very good, very early feedback on your product. if a company did that in the commercial world, their reputation would be hammered because their minimum viable product failed the first time it went out. So those are the types of things, as we talk to people in the Valley, it says, here's why it makes sense for a company to work with the government. And when you talk in those terms, people suddenly get it. But that doesn't apply to everything. You can't force that to happen. They really have to want to do it.
It sounds like a lot of the aspects of that relationship that you're describing would be contrary to the standard operating procedure of a government bureaucracy. Did you run into a cultural problem with your folks or the folks inside the Pentagon that you were explaining this to as you explained how these relationships had to develop?
I ran into that problem all the way down to the folks who actually worked for me at the Rapid Equipment Force. Real recently, Steve Blank, the guy who wrote the Lean Startup Manual, posted a great blog post, and he's got a picture of the diagram that I had to draw for people that work for me to help them understand what their relationship with things was supposed to be versus what they thought it was. But culturally, it's very difficult to get the highly harmonized, efficient stovepipes to understand that as they become more efficient, they become more of a detriment to the next stovepipe over that they have to hand something off to. And it gets even more so as you get to the government versus commercial world discussion, where government folks think they're doing a great job of being very precise in writing a requirement and putting everything under the sun, and only realize that they're eons past where the commercial guys would even bother listening to them.
Peter Newell of BMNT Partners, my guest, former director of the U.S. Army's Rapid Equipping Force. Did you, as you tried to explain that dynamic and you tried to bring people on board with getting comfortable with that dynamic, what were some of the other pain points that you ran into that would be advantageous for the folks that are working on the Defense Innovation Unit Experimental to pay attention to?
I think one of the main ones, and what I hope to see that the DIUX actually overcome, is if you're an outsider or somebody who just visits the Valley, despite the fact that folks will come out to the Valley and they'll hang out for a couple of days, and they'll go to Google, LinkedIn, Facebook, and they think they've got it, and go back to D.C. and talk. The Valley runs based on personal networks. And those networks are formed based on actually doing work with people. And the better networks, those networks of highly trusted organizations of people, are formed by taking mutual risk while actually working on things. So my explanation to people and even to what I had to go through is you sometimes have to spend money and do something that may or may not work out, simply to show the people that you want on place to work with you that you're truly there and you are going to put your feet in the fire just like everybody else. And when you're talking emerging technology or quickly developing technology or startups or whatever else, that's how life is every single day. It's not on a year-long cycle. There's no break in between. Startups where we live and die every day based on whether they can actually make something move.